Live from WRAL News Headquarters in Raleigh, your number one source for local news. WRAL News, coverage you can count on.
We are just minutes away from the governor's State of the State address happening live in front of the North Carolina General Assembly. You are looking live at the state legislative building right now.
Glowing beautifully tonight. This is Governor Cooper's fourth State of the State address since taking office. We will bring it to you live in its entirety as soon as things get started in just a few minutes. Good evening. Thanks for being with us. I'm Dan Haggerty.
And I'm Deborah Morgan. First, an update on another big story we're following today. Officials have identified two of the five people killed in a Cumberland County crash involving a tractor trailer. One of the victims was 11-year-old London Autry. 36-year-old Gabriel Autry was also killed in the crash on Highway 13 and Hayfield Road yesterday afternoon. Officials say both of those victims were in an SUV when it ran a stop sign and was hit by a tractor trailer. Three others in that vehicle also died. The driver of the tractor trailer, Tyreek Bannerman, suffered minor injuries and was cited for not having a driver license with him at the time of the crash. Another nice day on tap tomorrow until a front brings some changes to the forecast.
Your meteorologist Kat Campbell in the WRAL Severe Weather Center timing out this temperature drop we're going to see, Kat.
We're going to go back from spring toward winter. We could even see a frost as we get into early Thursday morning. We've got a backdoor cold front that drops in from the north tonight into early tomorrow. That changes our wind direction to a chilly north wind. So enjoy tomorrow while you can. It's our last day in the 70s on the 7-day forecast. You'll definitely want to make an outdoor plan day with days like this. 75, mostly sunny tomorrow, dropping near 60 for the high, though, Wednesday and Thursday. And both Wednesday and Thursday mornings, lows will be in the 30s.
All right, Kat, thank you.
From the North Carolina General Assembly in downtown Raleigh, this is a special presentation of the State of the State Address by North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper.
And now we take a live look inside the state legislative building, and there is Governor Roy Cooper shaking the hands of lawmakers as he approaches the lectern.
Making his way to give his State of the State tonight. Any moment we will hear his 2023 State of the State address.
Well, now let's bring in our WRAL State Government reporter, Travis Fain. First of all, you've had a look at the speech. What are some of the themes you expect here?
So the broad theme is going to be about continuing to set the state up for the next generation. You know, in a governor's last 2 years, he's term limited. He's got two more years to kind of set things up for the future. We've got all this federal pandemic money we're going to spend it on water infrastructure, moving broadband projects forward so that rural areas will have broadband. And he also wants to fund teachers. So, you know, he wants to spend money on the education system, workforce development. He's going to call for a double-digit raise tonight for teachers.
We know that he is going to also speak against the culture war dynamics that often enter politics nowadays. It is interesting also the Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson will be giving the closing remarks afterward today. Typically not something the Lieutenant Governor does, and culture war dynamics typically follow his strategy as we anticipate a potential run for governor. So what is Governor Cooper going to say there, you think?
Yeah, he's going to basically ask Republicans to stay away from culture war issues. I mean, obviously, abortion is a big issue before the state legislature this year. We're going to talk about it. It's going to be a debate. It's one sentence without using the word in the governor's speech, at least as it was prepared. And Mark Robinson, who you saw a moment ago, he's bombastic. He is a huge, and I think the governor is coming on right now.
Members of the General Assembly, distinguished guests, His Excellency, the Governor of the State of North Carolina, the Honorable Roy Cooper.
Thank you, everybody. Mr. President Pro Tem, Mr. Speaker, Lieutenant Governor, members of the General Assembly, Council of State, Mr. Chief Justice and members of the Supreme Court, Madam Chief Judge and members of the Court of Appeals, Cabinet Secretaries, and my fellow North Carolinians, I'm so honored to join you to report on the state of our great state. With me tonight is my remarkable wife, our First Lady, Kristen, our three wonderful daughters, Hillary, Natalie, and Claire, and my son-in-law, Zach, and my brother, Pell, all of whom I'm thankful for each and every day. Thank you, guys. So grateful for all of you. You know, each generation has but so many chances to leave an indelible mark on history that benefits generations to come. And so often, our greatest advancements come after our greatest upheavals, war, protests, strife, disasters, pandemic. To find ourselves as state leaders at a time like this is to bear tremendous responsibility. A responsibility to learn from adversity and make things better. A responsibility that reaches far into the future. 234 years ago, legislative leaders, following the directive in our first Constitution, cited the indispensable duty to consult the happiness of a rising generation and chartered the first public university in the nation. Today, the positive effects of North Carolina's great public university system reach around the globe. 60 years ago, a forward-looking group of North Carolinians had the vision to see a place for research and development. They recognized an urgent need to diversify our state's economic anchors, and they worked collaboratively to do something about it. Today, we know their work as the Research Triangle Park. 39 years ago, spotting yet another shift in industry, our leaders gathered strength from our world-class universities, medical schools, and researchers to launch the North Carolina Biotechnology Center, which has helped to spark a surging life sciences sector in our economy. Time and again, overcoming adversity, our leaders had the foresight and the resolve to invest in new ideas that have revolutionized our state, impacting the generations that followed. And while we stand on their shoulders, we also stand at an altogether new crossroads, one that demands that we have the same clarity of purpose, the same innovation, the same determination that brought us here. Our moment to build enduring prosperity is now, and I know that North Carolina is ready. As we sit here tonight, North Carolina is cementing its place as a leader in the global clean energy economy. No longer the industry of the future, but the flourishing business of today. North Carolina is now a clean energy destination, bringing good-paying manufacturing jobs to parts of our states that years ago knew more factory closures than ribbon cuttings. Consider electric vehicles, now projected to grow into a $400 billion global market in just 5 years, and it's cranking up right here. From the battery manufacturing in Randolph County to the semiconductor production and electric vehicle manufacturing in Chatham County to the charging station production in Durham County, North Carolina has a claim to every link and every job in this fast-growing, lucrative supply chain. The private sector electric vehicle market is about to take the world by storm, and North Carolina is riding the first wave. And that means more money in the pockets of North Carolinians, even as we do our part to fight climate change. Now, through bipartisan cooperation right here in this General Assembly, we became just the second state in the Southeast to put carbon reduction requirements into law. And through my executive orders, we brought people together to plot our course to a lower cost, net zero carbon future, to cleaner transportation, and toward more renewable energy like wind and solar. With challenges like jobs and climate change, you can only make progress when you set ambitious goals. And we're taking action to reach those goals because progress is never passive. And it's not just clean energy that's thriving in our state. Technology, aerospace, biotechnology, advanced manufacturing, and many more industries are building for growth in North Carolina. In 2022, we broke records yet again with tens of thousands of new jobs last year alone, from the cities of Charlotte and Greensboro to the counties of Halifax and Scotland, in urban and rural areas far and wide. North Carolina continues to be the best place for people to live, learn, work, and raise a family. And we've made sure that it's no secret. In 2022, North Carolina was named the number one state in the country for business. You legislators deserve some of the credit for that. My administration. Yeah, you do. Give yourselves a hand. My administration deserves some of the credit for that. Our business community deserves some of the credit for that. But we all know who deserves the bulk of the credit. Those who make up our amazing workforce, the determined, dedicated, and diverse people of North Carolina. Yep, our talented, educated workers are the foundation of our economic success. And we've succeeded in expanding that workforce to be more diverse and more inclusive. Like with veterans who served our great country, people with disabilities, formerly incarcerated people who've paid their debt to society, all are becoming integral parts of our workforce because we are being intentional about making it happen. And as our growth accelerates, we must not forget that once-in-a-generation opportunities require once-in-a-generation investments. Because these new jobs require more skill. The education pipeline from early childhood all the way through community college and universities is more important than ever. A great workforce requires real investment from cradle to career. And it starts with early childhood education at quality child care centers. With federal resources initiated by the Biden administration, we've invested more than $800 million to stabilize child care, helping centers with great teachers stay open, and helping parents get back to work. It's a triple play, guys. Education for the child, a job earning money for the parent, and a badly needed employee for the business. We need to fill them with high quality staff and keep these child care centers open. One child care leader is with us tonight. Rhonda Rivers is the Regional Director of Curriculum and Training for Leaf Spring Schools in Charlotte. Her centers used our child care grants to give bonuses to recruit and retain high quality teachers. Rhonda has said that these grants helped her keep good teachers who might have been forced to go elsewhere, even though they love their jobs. For all they do for children, parents, and businesses, let's give Rhonda and her colleagues a hand for their amazing work. Rhonda. Now, we all know that a great workforce also relies on public schools. Educating the next generation of workers who will fill the jobs that we haven't even imagined yet is how we're going to stay an economic powerhouse. And we know that a sound basic education is required by our state constitution, calls for qualified teachers in every classroom, skilled principals in every school, excellent counselors, and funding to support every student from every walk of life. Now, I know that many of my Republican friends don't believe the North Carolina Supreme Court should be able to order you to invest more than our children's education to comply with the Constitution. But the court should uphold decades of bipartisan Supreme Court precedent that comes down on the side of the children, because that's what really matters, the children. The education investments ordered by the court are not only the right thing to do for our children, but our parents, our workforce, our businesses. We have the money this year and next to fund the plan. And if we're smart about our tax policy, we can fund it well into the future. The budget I will present to you invests in the entire education plan ordered by the court. It gives teachers and principals double-digit raises. It keeps the buses running. It helps kids with special needs. It keeps schools safe. It does not raise taxes, and it balances the budget. Supporting students also means more mental health care. The youth mental health crisis cannot be ignored. Just ask Meredith Drawn, who's here with us tonight. Meredith experiences this crisis up close. As a counselor, a school counselor at B. Everett Jordan Elementary School in Alamance County, Meredith sees firsthand the increasing number of children dealing with stress and anxiety. Her support is critical to their well-being and can be life-saving. All our counselors, teachers, and school staff play a vital role in student mental health. And we are so proud that Meredith was named the 2023 National School Counselor of the Year. Let's give Meredith a big hand. Federal gear funds, I've already directed tens of millions of dollars to this critically important effort, including mental health first aid that helps teachers and school staff recognize the signs of a child in crisis. And in the coming days, I'll propose a plan that makes historic investments in the whole person health of every North Carolinian. It'll save lives, save government resources, and pay dividends for decades to come. The education pipeline continues with our community colleges and universities that are central to the educated workforce of the future. In every corner of our state, community colleges are coordinating directly with local industry and workforce development boards. They're creating hands-on training programs that help our graduates cross the stage with a degree or credential and a job offer in hand. I've worked with you legislators in a bipartisan way, and I'm grateful for that, to make sure that people can get this training through Longleaf Commitment Grants, Finish Line Grants, and other community college funding. Altogether, let's keep at this, guys. We've got to do it. We also have the very best array of public and private universities, including more four-year HBCUs than any other state in the country. And we need to keep investing. But in order for our public universities to stay great, our leaders on the University Board of Governors and trustees must reflect the broad demographic and political diversity in our state. That's why I created the Bipartisan Commission on the Future of Public Universities to propose changes to the way our university leadership is selected to better reflect who we are. I ask you to carefully consider their report. We must maintain a world-class education system, keeping our amazing state employee workforce together, building infrastructure, making sure that people are healthy, and making other investments to keep our state thriving. That requires a smart tax policy. Now, before the finger-pointing starts, I want to be clear. We do not need to raise taxes. But even the North Carolina Chamber of Commerce has said that our current corporate tax rates are already competitive. Guys, the jobs are coming fast and furious to North Carolina right now. And more tax cuts for those at the top will stunt our growth when we should be investing in our workforce. We don't need more tax breaks for corporations and the wealthiest North Carolinians. In addition to education, we're tackling the challenge of our robust growth with more critical infrastructure, like roads and bridges and ports and rail. And thanks to the generational investments of the American Rescue Plan and the bipartisan infrastructure law, we're investing more than $2 billion to do what once seemed like a faraway dream. We are going to ensure that every home in North Carolina has access to high-speed internet. And our Office of Digital Equity and Literacy, the first in the nation, by the way, is working to ensure that everyone can get online with affordable devices and good training. And getting more people online means healthier communities. And that's something that Phyllis Pillman knows well. Phyllis lives in Ahoskie, and she's here tonight with Kim Schwartz, the CEO of Roanoke Chouan Community Health Center, to highlight the remarkable ways that telemedicine can benefit our state. Phyllis has a hybrid plan of care where she sees a regular doctor in person while connecting with specialists as far away as Charlotte. That's a 280-mile gap that Phyllis and her specialists can span in just seconds. Phyllis, we're glad you're online. And Kim, we're glad that your center provides that valuable service for the people in eastern North Carolina. Let's give them a hand tonight. Using federal funds to make historic investments in clean water. Across the country, we've seen the consequences of neglected water systems, particularly in our rural communities. Without reliable, clean drinking water, families struggle, new businesses won't come to town, and communities can wither. Traveling across the state, I've heard stories from families who can't wash their clothes regularly because the water's brown, about pipes that freeze and break when it's cold, about frequent boil alerts because the water may not be safe. Now those stories will change. In a normal year, our state invests around $200 million in clean water infrastructure. But with this new federal funding, we're investing more than $2.3 billion over the next 2 years to rebuild hundreds of water systems in nearly every single county in our state. The town of Ivanhoe in Sampson County got one of these grants because Russell Devane, who's here with us tonight, worked with other members of his community and with local and state government to highlight the problem, resulting in $13.2 million bringing clean water to his town. Let's give Russell and all of the community leaders who are working to make life better for their residents, let's give them a big hand. Tonight I've stressed how we are at a pivotal moment with unprecedented opportunities to benefit the generations to come. One of the ways we are seizing that moment is by expanding Medicaid. I'm grateful for our unified Democratic legislators and some of the Republicans who have been relentless for years in this effort to expand Medicaid. And I commend the hard work of the Republican leadership of this legislature for embracing this and coming together in agreement. I also deeply appreciate the many healthcare professionals and advocates from all walks of life who have worked tirelessly to get this done. When we get Medicaid expansion across the finish line, it will save lives. And tonight I bring a message of urgency that I hope all of you will keep at heart as we go through these legislative weeks. Every month we wait to expand not only costs lives, but cost our state more than $521 million a month in federal health care dollars. And if we don't expand soon, we will forfeit an additional $1.8 billion in health care access and stabilization, or HASP funds, that our hospitals will never get back. And that would be particularly hard on our rural hospitals. No business would make that kind of financial decision. Guys, finally, we all now agree on Medicaid expansion. We all now agree on how to do it, and we all now agree on what other health care laws will be changed with it, for mental health, for working families, for rural hospitals, for a healthier North Carolina, for $1.8 billion that we cannot afford to leave behind. Let's expand Medicaid now. Another important group that has frequently called for Medicaid expansion is our law enforcement officers. They witness every day the consequences of people who need mental health care instead of handcuffs. As one sheriff told me, jails are our biggest mental health facilities. That's a problem we need to solve. We need law enforcement focused on protecting our communities. And there's more we can do to reduce crime and keep communities safe while making sure our criminal justice system operates fairly and without prejudice. My task force on racial equity in criminal justice has offered smart solutions, like a duty for officers to intervene. And I'm glad that this legislature, working together, took action on that recommendation to pass a bipartisan bill that I signed. Let's continue that important work, as there is more to do. And let's invest the resources to recruit and retain more good law enforcement officers and support them with the better pay and the better training that they deserve. And let's take affirmative steps to make life safer for these brave law enforcement officers and everyday people by keeping guns away from children, criminals, and those who are a danger to themselves or others. This is particularly true now that death by gunfire has surpassed car accidents as the number one cause of injury deaths for children. A recent report found that in 2021, children in North Carolina were 51% more likely to die from gun violence than children in the United States as a whole. If you support the responsible gun ownership that we are granted under the Second Amendment, as I do, then we cannot accept this. In the weeks to come, let's move forward to fight gun violence, not backward. At the outset of my time as governor, I set a clear goal. I wanted North Carolinians to be healthier, better educated, with more money in their pockets, to have lives of purpose and abundance. And though we still have hard work ahead for working families, for hurricane survivors, and those who feel forgotten and left behind, I'm encouraged by the progress that we have made as a state. Progress that's been possible because we've all agreed on economic development strategies and work to create a good business environment with the best employees in the world. Now, avoiding the worst of the culture wars these past 6 years has also been good for business. We worked together in a bipartisan way to fully repeal the horrible bathroom bill the first year I took office. And as we look to the future, I challenge this General Assembly to keep us off the front lines of those culture wars that hurt people and cost us jobs so that we can continue our successful bipartisan work. Use the public schools to build a brighter future, not to bully and marginalize LGBTQ students. Don't make teachers rewrite history. Keep the freedom to vote in reach for every eligible voter. Leave the decisions about reproductive health care to women and their doctors. We must not go backward when so much promise lies ahead. In my 6 years as governor, you legislators and I found plenty to disagree about, but we have found areas of common ground to strengthen our communities, create opportunity, and make our state more resilient and prepared for the future. Many of us in here have a deep faith in God. We share common aspirations. We want safe communities, good jobs, and an affordable quality of life. We want to give our children more and better opportunities than we had. This has always been North Carolina's story. Good people from diverse communities coming together to build a common future. I know that fierce debate will continue, but I appreciate that regardless of perspective, the men and women who serve in this body share a love of our state and a respect for the responsibility that comes with public service. Thank you for that.
Shot in 4K ultra high definition. Your number one source for local news. WRAL News. Coverage you can count on.
The school bus driver shortage in Wake County continues to get worse. Coming up, we'll break down the latest number of driver vacancies and what school leaders are doing to recruit people for the job.
And today's the last day that we're going to see unseasonably warm temperatures. Cold front swinging through right now. I'll show you when we'll start to feel the changes.
Plus, a step in the fight against the fentanyl and opioid crisis in North Carolina this morning. What you need to know about the push for harder drug trafficking penalties happening today.
And breaking news, a business in Durham will be closed after a fire that broke out at 1 this morning. The damage to the bakery. It's been a busy morning for Durham firefighters there. It is 4:30. Thanks for waking up with us. You won't need a jacket today, but you're going to need to find your coat soon. I'm Renee Chu.
I'm Jeff Hogan. Yeah, you can tell when you head outside. A little warmer than yesterday and a little breezier as well. Elizabeth Gardner in the WRL Severe Weather Center.
Yeah, stepping out the door here into the gardens where you can see, even though it's dark, it's a beautiful tree that is in bloom. 55 degrees right now. Currently, our wind is still out of the southwest at 9 miles per hour, and that is bringing nice warmth into the area. But that changes quickly. I just showed you at the beginning of the newscast that front that's crossing our area right now. Haven't started to see the change in temperatures. As a matter of fact, we should easily be able to make it into the 70s today. And then by late today, maybe starting around 5 and 6 o'clock, we start to feel the cooler air. It's 61 in Fayetteville right now, 58 in Goldsboro, 55 in South Hill. So very warm start this morning. Our winds will really begin to pick up as we get closer to lunchtime. We'll see winds steady at 20, gusting southwest and then changing to northwest, with gusts up to 30 miles per hour this afternoon. So that's going to help to draw that cooler air in. And here's a look at how things go with temperatures. Starting in the 50s this morning, around lunchtime, we'll be the warmest in the mid-70s. Typically, we see the warmest temperatures around 3 or 4 o'clock, but that won't be true today. We'll begin to see the temperatures dropping as the winds pick up. We do have 30s for overnight lows in our forecast later this week. I'll show you when coming up.
I'm Michael Grayson, the WRAL breaking news tracker in Durham, where crews are starting to clear the scene of a fire that started in a bakery in the strip mall you see behind me. Take a look at this video from the WRAL breaking news tracker of the scene. This video is around 1:30 to 2 in the morning. The Durham Fire Department did confirm in a press release that this fire started at around 1 in the morning at the strip mall on the 1800 block of Liberty Street. Crews said they could see a large amount of black smoke coming from the building once they arrived. You can see all that black soot right there on the window, some of it there on the door as well. The fire chief I spoke with said there was a lot of damage from the fire, possibly even more though from the smoke inside. Luckily, no one inside when this fire happened, but they are going to close down this bakery for the time being while repairs are made. No estimate on when it'll reopen. Now, the Rent-A-Center next door did have some minor smoke damage, so they went ahead and brought some fans in, started to air it out. Right now, I'm still working with the fire investigator to find out what the cause of this fire was. In Durham, Michael Grace, WRAL News.
Frustration for families in Wake County as the school bus driver shortage gets worse. Today, we'll get an update on what leaders are doing to recruit and keep drivers. WRAL's Nye Harden is live at Wake County's bus yard with a closer look at what's needed. Naya.
Renee, the bus driver shortage numbers have continued to grow here in Wake County schools, and it's also affecting many parents who are trying to scramble to find rides for their children. Well, now we have these latest numbers that are letting us know exactly how bad it is. Take a look at this. New numbers show that 285 bus driver openings are currently in Wake County. More than 32% of the spots are not filled. That number has grown every month. The school system currently pays its drivers $17.20 an hour. To get more drivers, they've boosted marketing, paying for advertising on social media, and redesigning their landing pages with lead forms. Other districts, though, in the area have resorted to offering more pay. Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools just approved $20 per hour for their bus drivers. Raising pay for Wake County schools could be discussed when it comes to bus drivers today. Of course, we'll be there at the meeting, and we'll be hearing in on what they have to say, and we'll have updates for you in our later newscast. Nia Harden, WRAL News in Raleigh.
The Cumberland County Sheriff's Office is working to make an arrest after a deadly shooting in Hope Mills. Sheriff's deputies responded to Medicus Lane near Woodington Road around 9:15 last night. When they got there, they found a man dead from a gunshot wound. The victim's name has not yet been released.
This morning, a step forward in the fight against the fentanyl and opioid crisis in North Carolina. WRAL's Laura Levine is live in downtown Raleigh with what families who have lost loved ones and lawmakers are pushing for today. Laura?
Jeff, good morning. This morning, lawmakers and families impacted by the opioid and fentanyl crisis are expected to show up in numbers here at the legislative building today. Now, take a look at these statistics. 8 North Carolinians die each day from fentanyl poisoning. More than 13,000 died from fentanyl between 2013 to November 2022. A bill sponsored by Senator Danny Britt and Michael Lazara is pushing for harsher punishment for fentanyl and opioid drug offenses. This includes higher fines for trafficking and more charges for anyone responsible for the death of someone by the drugs. Victims' families across the triangle are trying to raise awareness about the drugs here in the community.
Other people who'd lost a child to fentanyl or a loved one, they shouldn't stand alone. And I felt like that we would all be stronger if we stood together.
And Barb Walsh there, she lost her daughter very recently to accidental fentanyl overdose. Attorney General Josh Stein is also asking the state legislature for funding for a trafficking unit here. That press conference happening today at the legislative building will begin at 10 a.m. Laura Levine, WREL News. We're live in Raleigh.
We've learned the name of the person killed in a motorcycle crash in Sampson County. 44-year-old Timothy Barefoot from Dunn died yesterday afternoon in a crash near Clinton. Barefoot was driving near Keener Road when his motorcycle ran into a ditch. Highway Patrol says he was not wearing a helmet at the time of the crash. We're getting a look at what authorities believe are 4 Americans being kidnapped in Mexico. You can see what appears to be a woman being dragged into a pickup truck. The attorney general says the group may have been targeted by mistake, adding they were riding in a white minivan with a North Carolina license plate. Mexico's president said the Americans traveled to buy medicine. Agents say men with guns fired shots at their car, then kidnapped them shortly after they entered the country. The FBI is offering a $50,000 reward for their return. The agency has not released the names of the people who were kidnapped.
Search for a new superintendent for Wake County Schools is moving forward. Superintendent Kathy Moore announced last month that she will retire at the end of the school year. At their meeting today, the school board will vote on a contract with State School Boards Association to officially start the search for her replacement. The school board will appoint an interim superintendent in July if it has not hired a permanent superintendent by then.
Governor Cooper is calling on the state's lawmakers to take action and invest in the state's future. In his final State of the State address last night, Cooper said the state's booming growth and $3.2 billion budget surplus can help transform the state for the future. He urged lawmakers not to cut taxes further on corporations and the wealthy, saying they should invest the money instead in education and other needs.
As our growth accelerates, we must not forget that once-in-a-generation opportunities require once-in-a-generation investments.
The governor also praised the growth of the state's clean energy and other economic sectors and warned lawmakers that venturing into hot-button issues like abortion and LGBTQ rights could stunt that growth. In his response to the state of the state, Republican Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson credited the state's booming economy to the fiscal conservatism of Republican legislative leaders.
If the Democrats have their way, they'll pull us back into an era of government overreach, high taxes, and attacks on our personal freedoms. During the pandemic, we saw just how far they would go to control your lives.
Robinson is expected to run for governor in 2024.
An update this morning on the road project planned for Blue Ridge Road and Hillsborough Street. It'll be at least tomorrow before that road closes for construction. DOT says weather conditions forced the delay of the project. The plan is to make Blue Ridge pass underneath Hillsborough Street, underneath the railroad tracks, as well as Barrel Road. DOT says it's all part of a larger construction plan to make that intersection safer for the people who attend events in that area. Coming up on 440 right now, from enforcing rules to protecting young inmates, juvenile detention officers are in short supply in North Carolina. We explain one of the possible solutions to that shortage.
And some soccer players say they're uncomfortable wearing white shorts during games. We'll explain why and how it's leading teams in the Triangle and across the country to change their uniforms.
Take a live look at Pinehurst this morning, right down at Pinehurst Resort and Country Club. Beautiful look there. Another warm day ahead. Meteorologist Elizabeth Gardner will explain when the next cold front will move through our area.
From the WRAL Severe Weather Center, North Carolina's most experienced team of meteorologists.
It is 4:43 on a nice mild morning, 58 in Rocky Mount, it's 55 in Durham and 61 in Fayetteville. So a light jacket is probably all you'll need out there this morning. And we do have a nice warm afternoon on the way. But there are a few caveats. It is going to be windy this afternoon and temperatures by 4 or 5 o'clock are going to start to drop behind our cold front. So heading out the door, it's nice out there. Temperatures will be in the 50s to low 60s to begin with. Again, just a light jacket is all you'll need. Feels nice for exercising this morning. Around lunchtime, we climb into the mid 70s. But then by the evening, we're back into the 60s. It's still going to feel fine, but it will be a little on the windy side. Overnight tonight, it turns much colder, and we have the potential for freezing temperatures coming up just in the next couple of days. I'll show you how cold it will get coming up.
Happening right now in the WREL Live Center, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's sister is warning that North Korea is ready to act against the U.S. and South Korea. She says her country is ready to take quick, overwhelming action against the U.S. This comes a day after the U.S. flew a nuclear-capable bomber, a fighter jet, in a demonstration of strength against the North. Now, this training was the latest in a series of drills between the allies, the U.S. and South Korea, in recent months. Now, she did not elaborate on any planned actions in her statement, but we know that North Korea often launches test missiles in response to the U.S.-South Korean military drills.
Michelle, thank you. Police are working to make an arrest after a deadly shooting outside the home of the Indianapolis Colts. Officers say they found the man who had been shot right near Lucas Oil Stadium last night. He later died. The nearby Indiana Convention Center was put on lockdown as police searched for a suspect.
JetBlue is preparing for a lawsuit from the Justice Department this week. The suit would try to block the airline's $3.8 million takeover of Spirit Airlines. JetBlue says the government's antitrust regulators are set on stopping the merger. The airlines say the merger will help competition rather than weaken it. According to an agreement on the DOG's review of the deal, the government will have to sue to block the transaction by tomorrow.
The Raleigh area saw a 34% increase in credit card fraud last year. It's a study from Upgraded Points using data from the FTC. It found high inflation over the last 2 years led to increased need for credit cards and therefore an increased risk of credit card fraud. Raleigh's 34% increase was 16th highest in the nation.
Nearly half of jobs in the state's juvenile detention centers are unfilled. That has some pushing for an increase in starting pay to try to recruit more workers. There are so many vacant positions that some employees are working more than one role each day. Some point to the starting salary of $35,000 a year for juvenile detention workers as a major hurdle. Adult detention workers start between $45,000 and $50,000 a year. The state's Deputy Secretary of Juvenile Justice told WRL's Julian Grace about the effort to close the gap.
So we're doing several things right now. One is that we're offering a sign-on bonus for employees. We're also doing retention bonuses for employees to try to get them to stay in those roles that they're in.
Kentucky recently moved to increase starting pay for juvenile detention center workers from $35,000 to $50,000, and it quickly filled 68 positions. The Nash County School System has finalized a deal to put weapon scanners in all high schools. A board member says it will cost about $1 million over the next 4 years. Now, members of the Harnett County School Board had a similar discussion last night. They did not vote on whether to add weapon detection equipment there just yet. Board members say they will keep evaluating logistics before taking a vote. A flu vaccine for chickens could be in the works soon. The Biden administration is considering vaccinating chickens following an outbreak of bird flu. This outbreak is the largest ever in history. The effects of it has caused egg prices to surge, millions of chickens to die, and has spread to other animals. Though the risk of the flu spreading to humans is low, there are fears that it could mutate to be able to.
Change could be coming as one professional soccer team announced it is changing uniform bottoms from white to black to protect female athletes who have their period. Orlando Pride, the first National Women's Soccer League team to make those changes. Trinity Soccer Academy, a female youth team in the Triangle, made similar changes several seasons ago for similar reasons. WRL spoke with a longtime soccer player in the area who considers this a significant step for women and sports.
Now that they've kind of broken through the mold, now there's more female athletes out there, there's more awareness of female athletes, I think it's really, kind of come out. So I think it's awesome.
WRL reached out to other sports teams here at home, including the NC Courage. We're waiting to hear back.
It is 4:48 and feels very mild out there. We get one more day of this warmth and then big changes ahead, Elizabeth.
I tell you what, I'm not looking forward to it. You know, it feels like spring is here. You know, I hate to have to backtrack again, but it is what it is. So 55 right now, it feels great out there currently. Our dew point's at 50. We're looking at temperatures climbing into the 70s by lunchtime. So if you like these temperatures, get out and enjoy it because we're not likely to see much of this maybe for at least 2 weeks or beyond. 61 in Fayetteville right now, 58 Rocky Mount, 54 in Roxboro, 59 degrees in Southern Pines. It's a nice start and a lot warmer than it was this time yesterday, anywhere from around 15 to about 20 degrees warmer than it was this time yesterday. Our highs this afternoon looking very pleasant, 79 in Fayetteville and Clinton, 74 in Rocky Mount, 71 in Roxboro, 77 in Southern Pines. So it's a very warm, we have a very warm afternoon in our forecast. But here are the caveats. It is going to be windy. It's not terribly windy right now, but once we hit lunchtime, our winds will be steady up to 20 miles per hour, starting off this morning out of the southwest. But around lunchtime, we're going to switch it to northwesterly, and that's going to begin to drag the colder air in. Once it gets here, it is not going anywhere. Anytime soon. We'll see gusts this afternoon up to 30 miles per hour, and that does mean we have high fire danger, so you don't want to do any outdoor burning this afternoon, even though it's a pleasant afternoon to be outside. Here comes our cold front. That cold front is moving across the area right now, and it'll take a little time to shift our winds. Right now, our winds are southwesterly, but behind the front will be northwesterly. So that northwesterly wind will increase this afternoon and gradually allow all the cold air to move in, and we'll feel it overnight tonight. 38 is our normal low. Our temperatures have been so warm lately, it's hard to keep track of what is normal this time of year. But our normal low is 38. Tomorrow morning, 37. Thursday morning is the morning that we'll have the best chance of seeing frost and freeze conditions across the area. And then we're a little bit warmer Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But we're still talking about low 40s, even some upper 30s. This is a look at our freeze potential for Thursday morning. It's a freeze threat in purple and a frost threat in blue. And that includes a lot of Wake County southward. Now, there really shouldn't be a lot of tender vegetation out there this time of year, but of course we're way ahead of the game in terms of all the warmth, and there are a lot of buds out there. If you have anything in your garden that you want to protect, you definitely want to do that. But our average last freeze isn't until the first part of April. The average last hard freeze, that would be a real killing freeze, is usually at the end of March. And so farmers shouldn't be planting things right now, but of course some of those fruit trees could be budding a little bit early. Below normal temperatures likely to continue at least through March the 20th. So this is going to be with us for a while. 76 today, and then the 70s are gone for quite a while. We're near 60 on Wednesday and Thursday. Friday's going to be a chilly and wet day, at least for the second half of the day. I'm going to walk you through the timeline for rain on Friday and again on Sunday and Monday coming up in just a few minutes.
Thanks, Elizabeth. The Wake County Animal Center is in dire need for people to adopt. We'll tell you about the deals they have right now as they hope to clear the shelter.
Huge growth of esports now gives more high school grads a new reason to pursue college. A growing number of historically black colleges and universities are adding the sport to their curriculum to attract those students. It is more than just playing games. It's about career opportunities.
Unleash the potential.
It all boils down to this. Now
is the time. This is the place.
The place for collegiate sports has always been places like a field or a court. Now more historically black colleges and universities and conferences like the MEAC are investing in games played on video screens.
One, go!
The schools now invest more in esports equipment and labs as a recruiting tool.
We have a lot of freshmen that come in and they will look for universities that have esport clubs.
Christy Phillips is a graduate of NC Central and Fayetteville State Universities. She's the president of BU Gamers in Durham. She says more students see gaming as a career.
There's scholarship opportunities, there's career opportunities, there's shoutcasting opportunities, just commentary for playing the games.
LeBron is just owning the Bucks right now.
It's not the real LeBron. Gamers make it happen.
This is what you call healthy competition.
Phillips says esports is only part of the collegiate experience. It requires moderation.
You know, you have to take care of yourself mentally, physically, emotionally in order to play. It's just like any other sport.
She says esports is also good for growing businesses like hers.
And that we're partnered with Carolina Hub to make sure that we can spread and help all people, any levels of gaming, to come and be themselves.
Such a fascinating field. The urgent plea is coming from the Wake County Animal Center. It's asking people to considering adopting as it nears maximum capacity. Right now, the center has 135 dogs waiting for permanent homes, and another 20 are with foster families. On top of that, appointments to surrender pets are fully booked through mid-April, and that means another 130 dogs will be coming into the shelter over the next 6 weeks. Adoption fees for dogs are $95. That drops to $25 for any dog that's been at the shelter for more than 2 weeks. Those fees include the spay or neuter surgery, microchipping, and updated vaccinations.
The bus driver shortage in Wake County continues to get worse. And coming up, we break down the latest number of driver vacancies and what school leaders are doing to recruit people for the jobs.
Taking a live look in Apex this morning. Coming up, meteorologist Elizabeth Gardner will explain today's forecast and the big changes we'll expect later this week.
Norfolk Southern is taking steps to prevent more train derailments. What's included in the company's new six-step safety plan?